bad. His hands were bleeding. His eyes had gone slit-pupiled, goat-style, the way they did whenever he was terrified. "I don't know how," he panted. "I didn't..." "Wait," I said. "Listen." I heard something, a deep whisper in the darkness. Another few seconds, and Annabeth said, "Percy, this place..." "Shh!" I stood. The sound was getting louder, a muttering, evil voice from far, far below us, coming from the pit. Grover sat up. "What's that noise?" Annabeth heard it too now. I could see it in her eyes. "Tartarus! The entrance to Tartarus!" I uncapped Anaklismos. The bronze sword expanded, gleaming in the darkness, and the evil voice seemed to falter just for a moment before resuming its chant. I could almost make out words now, ancient, ancient words, older even than Greek, as if... "Magic," I said. "We have to get out of here," Annabeth said. Together, we dragged Grover to his hooves and started back up the tunnel. My legs wouldn't move fast enough. My backpack weighed me down. The voice got louder and angrier behind us, and we broke into a run. Not a moment too soon, a cold blast of wind pulled at our backs as if the entire pit were inhaling. For a terrifying moment, I lost ground, my feet slipping in the gravel. If we'd been any closer to the edge, we would have been sucked in. We kept struggling forward and finally reached the top of the tunnel where the cavern widened out into the fields of asphodel. The wind died. A wail of outrage echoed from deep in the tunnel. Something was not happy we'd gotten away. "What was that?" Grover panted, when we'd collapsed in the relative safety of a black poplar grove. "One of Hades' pets?" Annabeth and I looked at each other. I could tell she was nursing an idea, probably the same one she'd gotten during the taxi ride to L.A., but she was too scared to share it. That was enough to terrify me. I capped my sword, put the pen back in my pocket. "Let's keep going." I looked at Grover. "Can you walk?" He swallowed. "Yeah, sure. I never liked those shoes anyway." He tried to sound brave about it, but he was trembling as badly as Annabeth and I were. Whatever was in that pit was nobody's pet. It was unspeakably old and powerful. Even Echidna hadn't given me that feeling. I was almost relieved to turn my back on that tunnel and head toward the Palace of Hades. Almost. The Furies circled the parapets, high in the gloom. The outer walls of the fortress glittered black, and the two-story-tall bronze gates stood wide open. Up close, I saw that the engravings on the gates were scenes of death. Some were from modern times, an atomic bomb exploding over a city, a trench filled with gas mask-wearing soldiers, a line of African famine victims waiting with empty bowls. But all of them looked as if they'd been etched into the bronze thousands of years ago. I wondered if I was looking at prophecies that had come true. Inside the courtyard was the strangest garden I'd ever seen. Multicolored mushrooms, poisonous shrubs, and weird luminous plants grew without sunlight. Precious jewels made up for the lack of flowers, piles of rubies as big as my fist, clumps of raw diamonds. Standing here and there like frozen party guests were Medusa's garden statues, petrified children, satyrs and centaurs, all smiling grotesquely. In the center of the garden was an orchard of pomegranate trees, their orange blooms neon bright in the dark. "The Garden of Persephone," Annabeth said. "Keep walking." I understood why she wanted to move on. The tart smell of those pomegranates was almost overwhelming. I had a sudden desire to eat them, but then I remembered the story of Persephone. One bite of underworld food, and we would never be able to leave. I pulled Grover away to keep him from picking a big, juicy one. We walked up the steps of the palace, between black columns, through a black marble portico, and into the House of Hades. The entry hall had a polished bronze floor, which seemed to boil in the reflected torchlight. There was no ceiling, just the cavern roof, far above. I guess they never had to worry about rain down here. Every side doorway was guarded by a skeleton in military gear. Some wore Greek armor, some British redcoat uniforms, some camouflage with tattered American flags on the shoulders. They carried spears or muskets or M16s. None of them bothered us, but their hollow eye sockets followed us as we walked down the hall toward the big set of doors at the opposite end. Two U.S. Marine skeletons guarded the doors. They grinned down at us, rocket-propelled grenade launchers held across their chests. "You know," Grover mumbled, "I bet Hades doesn't have trouble with door-to-door salesmen." My backpack weighed a ton now. I couldn't figure out why. I wanted to open it, check to see if I had somehow picked up a stray bowling ball, but this wasn't the time. "Well, guys," I said, "I suppose we should knock?" A hot wind blew down the corridor, and the door swung open. The guard stepped aside. "I guess that means entrez-vous," Annabeth said. The room inside looked just like in my dream, except this time the throne of Hades was occupied. He was the third god I'd met, but the first who really struck me as godlike. He was at least 10 feet tall, for one thing, and he dressed in black silk robes and a crown of braided gold. His skin was albino white, his hair shoulder length and jet black. He wasn't bulked up like Ares, but he radiated power. He lounged on his throne of fused human bones, looking lithe, graceful, and dangerous as a panther. I immediately felt like he should be giving the orders. He knew more than I did. He should be my master. Then I told myself to snap out of it. Hades' aura was affecting me, just as Ares' had. The Lord of the Dead resembled pictures I'd seen of Adolf Hitler or Napoleon or the terrorist leaders who directed suicide bombers. Hades had the same intense eyes, the same kind of mesmerizing evil charisma.
"You are brave to come here, son of Poseidon," he said in an oily voice. "After what you have done to me, very brave indeed. Or perhaps you are simply very foolish."
Numbness crept into my joints, tempting me to lie down and just take a little nap at Hades' feet, curl up here and sleep forever. I fought the feeling and stepped forward. I knew what I had to say.
"Lord and uncle, I come with two requests."
Hades raised an eyebrow. When he sat forward in his throne, shadowy faces appeared in the folds of his black robes, faces of torment, as if the garment were stitched of trapped souls from the fields of punishment, trying to get out. The ADHD part of me wondered, off task, whether the rest of his clothes were made the same way. What horrible things would you have to do in your life to get woven into Hades' underwear?
"Only two requests," Hades said. "Arrogant child, as if you have not already taken enough. Speak then. It amuses me not to strike you dead yet."
I swallowed. This was going about as well as I'd feared. I glanced at the empty, smaller throne next to Hades's. It was shaped like a black flower, gilded with gold. I wished Queen Persephone were here. I recalled something in the legends about how she could calm her husband's moods. But it was summer. Of course, Persephone would be above in the world of light with her mother, the earth goddess Demeter. Her visits created the season, not the tilt of the planet. Annabeth cleared her throat. Her finger prodded me in the back.
"Lord Hades," I said, "look, sir, there can't be a war among the gods. It would be bad."
"Really bad," Grover added helpfully.
"Return Zeus's master bolt to me," I said. Please, sir, let me carry it to Olympus.
Hades' eyes grew dangerously bright.
You dare keep up this pretense after what you have done?
I glanced back at my friends. They looked as confused as I was.
Uncle? I said. You keep saying, after what I've done? What exactly have I done?
The throne room shook with a tremor so strong they probably felt it upstairs in Los Angeles. Debris fell from the cavern ceiling. Doors burst open all along the walls, and skeletal warriors marched in, hundreds of them, from every time period and nation in Western civilization. They lined the perimeter of the room, blocking the exits. Hades bellowed,
"Do you think I want war, godling?"
I wanted to say, "Well, these guys don't look like peace activists." But I thought that might be a dangerous answer. "You are the Lord of the Dead," I said carefully. "A war would expand your kingdom, right?"
"A typical thing for my brothers to say. Do you think I need more subjects? Did you not see the sprawl of Asphodel?"
"Well,
have you any idea how much my kingdom has swollen in this past century alone? How many subdivisions I've had to open?"
I opened my mouth to respond, but Hades was on a roll now.
"More security ghouls," he moaned. "Traffic problems at the Judgment Pavilion. Double overtime for the staff. I used to be a rich god, Percy Jackson. I control all the precious metals under the earth, but my expenses..."
"Karen wants a pay raise," I blurted, just remembering the fact. As soon as I said it, I wished I could sew up my mouth.
"Don't get me started on Karen,"
Hades yelled.
"He's been impossible ever since he discovered Italian suits. Problems everywhere, and I've got to handle all of them personally. The commute time alone from the palace to the gates is enough to drive me insane, and the dead just keep arriving. No, godling, I need no help getting subjects. I did not ask for this war."
"But you took Zeus's master bolt."
"Lies!"
More rumbling. Hades rose from his throne, towering to the height of a football goalpost.
"Your father may fool Zeus, boy, but I am not so stupid. I see his plan."
"His plan?"
"You were the thief on the winter solstice," he said. "Your father thought to keep you his little secret. He directed you into the throne room on Olympus. You took the master bolt and my helm. Had I not sent my fury to discover you at Yancey Academy, Poseidon might have succeeded in hiding his scheme to start a war. But now you have been forced into the open. You will be exposed as Poseidon's thief, and I will have my helm back."
"But..." Annabeth spoke. I could tell her mind was going a million miles an hour. "Lord Hades, your helm of darkness is missing too?"
"Do not play innocent with me, girl. You and the satyr have been helping this hero. Coming here to threaten me in Poseidon's name, no doubt? To bring me an ultimatum? Does Poseidon think I can be blackmailed into supporting him?"
"No," I said. "Poseidon didn't. I didn't."
"I have said nothing of the helm's disappearance," Hades snarled, "because I had no illusions that anyone on Olympus would offer me the slightest justice, the slightest help. I can ill afford for word to get out that my most powerful weapon of fear is missing. So I searched for you myself, and when it was clear you were coming to me to deliver your threat, I did not try to stop you."
"You didn't try to stop us, but..."
"Return my helm now, or I will stop death,"
Hades threatened.
That is my counter-proposal. I will open the earth and have the dead pour back into the world. I will make your lands a nightmare, and you, Percy Jackson, your skeleton will lead my army out of Hades.
The skeletal soldiers all took one step forward, making their weapons ready. At that point, I probably should have been terrified. The strange thing was, I felt offended. Nothing gets me angrier than being accused of something I didn't do. I've had a lot of experience with that. "You're as bad as Zeus," I said. "You think I stole from you? That's why you sent the Furies after me?"
"Of course," Hades said.
"And the other monsters?" Hades curled his lip.
"I had nothing to do with them. I wanted no quick death for you. I wanted you brought before me alive so you might face every torture in the fields of punishment. Why do you think I let you enter my kingdom so easily?"
"Easily?"
"Return my property."
"But I don't have your helm. I came for the Master Bolt."
"Which you already possess," Hades shouted. "You came here with it, little fool, thinking you could threaten me?"
"But I didn't."
"Open your pack, then."
A horrible feeling struck me. The weight in my backpack, like a bowling ball, it couldn't be. I slung it off my shoulder and unzipped it. Inside was a 2-foot-long metal cylinder, spiked on both ends, humming with energy. "Percy," Annabeth said, "how? I don't know. I don't understand."
"You heroes are all the same," Hades said. "Your pride makes you foolish, thinking you could bring such a weapon before me. I did not ask for Zeus's master bolt, but since it is here, you will yield it to me. I am sure it will make an excellent bargaining tool. And now, my helm. Where is it?"
I was speechless. I had no helm. I had no idea how the Master Bolt had gotten into my backpack, and I wanted to think Hades was pulling some kind of trick. Hades was the bad guy, but suddenly, the world turned sideways. I realized I'd been played with. Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades had been set at each other's throats by someone else. The Master Bolt had been in the backpack, and I'd gotten the backpack from... "Lord Hades, wait," I said. "This is all a mistake."
"A mistake?"
Hades roared. The skeletons aimed their weapons. From high above, there was a fluttering of leathery wings, and the three Furies swooped down to perch on the back of their master's throne. The one with Mrs. Dodds's face grinned at me eagerly and flicked her whip.
"There is no mistake," Hades said. "I know why you have come. I know the real reason you brought the bolt. You came to bargain for her."
Hades loosed a ball of gold fire from his palm. It exploded on the steps in front of me, and there was my mother, frozen in a shower of gold, just as she was at the moment when the Minotaur began to squeeze her to death. I couldn't speak. I reached out to touch her, but the light was as hot as a bonfire.
"Yes," Hades said with satisfaction. "I took her. I knew, Percy Jackson, that you would come to bargain with me eventually. Return my helm, and perhaps I will let her go. She is not dead, you know. Not yet. But if you displease me, that will change."
I thought about the pearls in my pocket. Maybe they could get me out of this, if I could just get my mom free.
"Ah, the pearls," Hades said,
and my blood froze.
"Yes, my brother and his little tricks. Bring them forth, Percy Jackson."
My hand moved against my will and brought out the pearls.
"Only 3? Hades said. "What a shame. You do realize each only protects a single person. Try to take your mother then, little godling.
And which of your friends will you leave behind to spend eternity with me? Go on, choose, or give me the backpack and accept my terms.
I looked at Annabeth and Grover. Their faces were grim.
We were tricked, I told them. Set up.
Yes, but why? Annabeth asked. And the voice in the pit?
I don't know yet, I said, but I intend to ask.
Decide, boy, Hades yelled.
Percy, Grover put his hand on my shoulder.
You can't give him the bolt.
I know that.
Leave me here, he said. Use the third pearl on your mom.
No.
I'm a satyr, Grover said. We don't have souls like humans do. He can torture me until I die, but he won't get me forever. I'll just be reincarnated as a flower or something. It's the best way.
No.
Annabeth drew her bronze knife.
You two go on, Grover. You have to protect Percy. You have to get your searcher's license and start your quest for Pan. Get his mom out of here. I'll cover you. I plan to go down fighting.
No way, Grover said. I'm staying behind.
Think again, goat boy, Annabeth said.
Stop it, both of you.
I felt like my heart was being ripped in two. They had both been with me through so much. I remembered Grover dive-bombing Medusa in the statue garden, and Annabeth saving us from Cerberus. We'd survived Hephaestus's Waterland ride, and the St. Louis Arch, the Lotus Casino. I'd spent thousands of miles worried that I'd be betrayed by a friend, but these friends would never do that. They had done nothing but save me over and over, and now they wanted to sacrifice their lives for my mom.
I know what to do, I said. Take these.
I handed them each a pearl.
Annabeth said, but Percy...
I turned and faced my mother. I desperately wanted to sacrifice myself and use the last pearl on her, but I knew what she would say. She would never allow it. I had to get the bolt back to Olympus and tell Zeus the truth. I had to stop the war. She would never forgive me if I saved her instead. I thought about the prophecy made at Half-Blood Hill, which seemed like a million years ago. You will fail to save what matters most in the end.
I'm sorry, I told her. I'll be back. I'll find a way.
The smug look on Hades' face faded. He said,
Godling?
I'll find your helm, uncle, I told him. I'll return it. Remember about Karen's pay raise.
Do not defy me.
And it wouldn't hurt to play with Cerberus once in a while. He likes red rubber balls.
Percy Jackson, you will not, I shouted.
Now, guys!
We smashed the pearls at our feet. For a scary moment, nothing happened.
Hades yelled,
Destroy them!
The army of skeletons rushed forward, swords out, guns clicking to full automatic. The Furies lunged, their whips bursting into flame. Just as the skeletons opened fire, the pearl exploded at my feet with a burst of green light and a gust of fresh sea wind. I was encased in a milky white sphere, which was starting to float off the ground. Annabeth and Grover were right behind me. Spears and bullets sparked harmlessly off the pearl bubbles as we floated up. Hades yelled with such rage, the entire fortress shook, and I knew it was not going to be a peaceful night in L.A.
Look up, Grover yelled. We're going to crash.
Sure enough, we were racing right toward the stalactites, which I figured would pop our bubbles and skewer us.
How do you control these things? Annabeth shouted.
I don't think you do, I shouted back. We screamed as the bubbles slammed into the ceiling and... darkness.
Were we dead?
No, I could still feel the racing sensation. We were going up, right through solid rock, as easily as an air bubble in water. That was the power of the pearls, I realized. What belongs to the sea will always return to the sea. For a few moments, I couldn't see anything outside the smooth walls of my sphere. Then my pearl broke through on the ocean floor. The two other milky spheres, Annabeth and Grover, kept pace with me as we soared upwards through the water. And kerblam! We exploded on the surface, in the middle of Los Angeles Bay, knocking a surfer off his board with an indignant, "Dude!" I grabbed Grover and hauled him over to a life buoy. I caught Annabeth and dragged her over too. A curious shark was circling us, a great white about 11 feet long. I said, "Beat it!" The shark turned and raced away. The surfer screamed something about bad mushrooms and paddled away from us as fast as he could. Somehow I knew what time it was. Early morning, June 21st, the day of the summer solstice. In the distance, Los Angeles was on fire, plumes of smoke rising from neighborhoods all over the city. There had been an earthquake, all right, and it was Hades' fault. He was probably sending an army of the dead after me right now. But at the moment, the underworld wasn't my biggest problem. I had to get to shore. I had to get Zeus's thunderbolt back to Olympus. Most of all, I had to have a serious conversation with the god who'd tricked me. Chapter 20. I battle my jerk relative. A Coast Guard boat picked us up, but they were too busy to keep us for long or to wonder how three kids in street clothes got out into the middle of the bay. There was a disaster to mop up. Their radios were jammed with distress calls. They dropped us off at the Santa Monica Pier with towels around our shoulders and water bottles that said, "I'm a junior Coast Guard," and sped off to save more people. Our clothes were sopping wet, even mine. When the Coast Guard boat had appeared, I silently prayed they wouldn't pick me out of the water and find me perfectly dry, which might have raised some eyebrows. So I'd willed myself to get soaked. Sure enough, my usual waterproof magic had abandoned me. I was also barefoot because I'd given my shoes to Grover. Better the Coast Guard wonder why one of us was barefoot than wonder why one of us had hooves. After reaching dry land, we stumbled down the beach, watching the city burn against a beautiful sunrise. I felt as if I'd just come back from the dead, which I had. My backpack was heavy with Zeus's master bolt. My heart was even heavier from seeing my mother. "I don't believe it," Annabeth said. "We went all that way." "It was a trick," I said, "a strategy worthy of Athena." "Hey," she warned. "You get it, don't you?" She dropped her eyes, her anger fading. "Yeah, I get it." "Well, I don't," Grover complained. "Would somebody..." "Percy," Annabeth said, "I'm sorry about your mother. I'm so sorry." I pretended not to hear her. If I talked about my mother, I was going to start crying like a little kid. "The prophecy was right," I said. "You shall go west and face the god who has turned. But it wasn't Hades. Hades didn't want war between the big three. Someone else pulled off the theft. Someone stole Zeus's master bolt and Hades' helm and framed me because I'm Poseidon's kid. Poseidon will get blamed by both sides. By sundown today, there will be a three-way war, and I'll have caused it." Grover shook his head, mystified. "But who would be that sneaky? Who would want war that bad?" I stopped in my tracks, looking down the beach. "Gee, let me think." There he was, waiting for us, in his black leather duster and his sunglasses, an aluminum baseball bat propped on his shoulder. His motorcycle rumbled beside him, its headlight turning the sand red. "Hey, kid," Ares said, seeming genuinely pleased to see me. "You were supposed to die."
"You tricked me," I said. "You stole the helm and the master bolt."
Ares grinned.
"Well, now, I didn't steal them personally. Gods taking each other's symbols of power, that's a big no-no. But you're not the only hero in the world who can run errands."
"Who did you use? Clarice? She was there at winter solstice."
The idea seemed to amuse him.
Doesn't matter. The point is, kid, you're impeding the war effort. See, you've got to die in the underworld. Then old Seaweed will be mad at Hades for killing you. Corpse Breath will have Zeus's master bolt, so Zeus will be mad at him, and Hades is still looking for this.
From his pocket, he took out a ski cap, the kind bank robbers wear, and placed it between the handlebars of his bike. Immediately, the cap transformed into an elaborate bronze war helmet.
The Helm of Darkness! Grover gasped.
Exactly, Ares said. Now where was I? Oh yeah, Hades will be mad at both Zeus and Poseidon because he doesn't know who took this. Pretty soon, we got a nice little three-way slugfest going.
But they're your family, Annabeth protested. Ares shrugged.
Best kind of war. Always the bloodiest. Nothing like watching your relatives fight, I always say.
You gave me the backpack in Denver, I said. The master bolt was in there the whole time.
Yes and no, Ares said. It's probably too complicated for your little mortal brain to follow, but the backpack is the master bolt sheath. Just morphed a bit. The bolt is connected to it, sort of like that sword you got, kid. It always returns to your pocket, right?
I wasn't sure how Ares knew about that, but I guess a god of war had to make it his business to know about weapons.
Anyway, Ares continued, I tinkered with the magic a bit, so the bolt would only return to the sheath once you reach the underworld. You get close to Hades, bingo, you got mail. If you died along the way, no loss. I still had the weapon.
But why not just keep the master bolt for yourself? I said. Why send it to Hades? Ares got a twitch in his jaw. For a moment, it was almost as if he were listening to another voice deep inside his head.
Why didn't I? Yeah, with that kind of firepower.
He held the trance for 1 second, 2 seconds. I exchanged nervous looks with Annabeth. Ares' face cleared.
I didn't want the trouble. Better to have you caught red-handed, holding the thing.
You're lying, I said. Sending the bolt to the underworld wasn't your idea, was it?
Of course it was.
Smoke drifted up from his sunglasses as if they were about to catch fire. You didn't order the theft, I guessed. Someone else sent a hero to steal the two items. Then, when Zeus sent you to hunt him down, you caught the thief. But you didn't turn him over to Zeus. Something convinced you to let him go. You kept the items until another hero could come along and complete the delivery. That thing in the pit is ordering you around.
I am the god of war. I take orders from no one. I don't have dreams.
I hesitated. Who said anything about dreams? Ares looked agitated, but he tried to cover it with a smirk.
Let's get back to the problem at hand, kid. You're alive. I can't have you taking that bolt to Olympus. You just might get those hard-headed idiots to listen to you. So I've got to kill you. Nothing personal.
He snapped his fingers. The sand exploded at his feet and out charged a wild boar, even larger and uglier than the one whose head hung above the door of Cabin 7 at Camp Half-Blood. The beast pawed the sand, glaring at me with beady eyes as it lowered its razor-sharp tusks and waited for the command to kill. I stepped into the surf. Fight me yourself, Ares! He laughed, but I heard a little edge to his laughter in uneasiness.
Ha ha ha! You've only got one talent, kid. Running away. You ran from the Chimera. You ran from the underworld. You don't have what it takes.
Scared?
In your adolescent dreams.
But his sunglasses were starting to melt from the heat of his eyes.
No direct involvement. Sorry, kid. You're not at my level.
Annabeth said, Percy, run! The giant boar charged. But I was done running from monsters, or Hades, or Ares, or anybody. As the boar rushed me, I uncapped my pen and sidestepped.
Riptide appeared in my hands. I slashed upward. The boar's severed right tusk fell at my feet, while the disoriented animal charged into the sea. I shouted, "Wave!" Immediately, a wave surged up from nowhere and engulfed the boar, wrapping around it like a blanket. The beast squealed once in terror. Then it was gone, swallowed by the sea. I turned back to Ares. "Are you going to fight me now?" I asked. "Or are you going to hide behind another pet pig?" Ares' face was purple with rage.
"Watch it, kid. I could turn you into..."
"A cockroach?" I said. "Or a tapeworm? Yeah, I'm sure. That'd save you from getting your godly hide whipped, wouldn't it?" Flames danced along the top of his glasses.
"Oh, man, you are really asking to be smashed into a grease spot."
"If I lose, turn me into anything you want. Take the bolt. If I win, the helm and the bolt are mine, and you have to go away." Ares sneered. He swung the baseball bat off his shoulder.
"How would you like to get smashed, classic or modern?"
I showed him my sword.
"That's cool, dead boy," he said. "Classic it is."
The baseball bat changed into a huge two-handed sword. The hilt was a large silver skull with a ruby in its mouth.
"Percy," Annabeth said, "don't do this. He's a god."
"He's a coward," I told her.
She swallowed.
"Wear this, at least for luck."
She took off her necklace with her 5 years' worth of camp beads and the ring from her father and tied it around my neck. "Reconciliation," she said. "Athena and Poseidon together." My face felt a little warm, but I managed to smile. "Thanks."
"And take this," Grover said.
He handed me a flattened tin can that he'd probably been saving in his pocket for 1,000 miles. "The satyrs stand behind you."
"Grover, I don't know what to say."
He patted me on the shoulder. I stuffed the tin can in my back pocket.
"You all done saying goodbye?"
Ares came toward me, his black leather duster trailing behind him, his sword glinting like fire in the sunrise.
"I've been fighting for eternity, kid. My strength is unlimited, and I cannot die. What have you got?"
A smaller ego, I thought, but I said nothing. I kept my feet in the surf, backing into the water up to my ankles. I thought back to what Annabeth had said at the Denver diner so long ago. Ares has strength. That's all he has. Even strength has to bow to wisdom sometimes. He cleaved downward at my head, but I wasn't there. My body thought for me. The water seemed to push me into the air, and I catapulted over him, slashing as I came down. But Ares was just as quick. He twisted, and the strike that should have caught him directly in the spine was deflected off the end of his sword hilt. He grinned.
"Not bad, not bad."
He slashed again, and I was forced to jump onto dry land. I tried to sidestep to get back to the water, but Ares seemed to know what I wanted. He outmaneuvered me, pressing so hard I had to put all my concentration on not getting sliced into pieces. I kept backing away from the surf. I couldn't find any openings to attack. His sword had a reach several feet longer than Anaclismos.
"Getting close," Luke had told me once, back in our sword class. "When you've got the shorter blade, get in close."
I stepped inside with a thrust, but Ares was waiting for that. He knocked my blade out of my hands and kicked me in the chest. I went airborne, 20, maybe 30 feet. I would have broken my back if I hadn't crashed into the soft sand of a dune.
"Percy!" Annabeth yelled. "Cops!"
I was seeing double. My chest felt like it had just been hit with a battering ram, but I managed to get to my feet. Couldn't look away from Ares, for fear he'd slice me in half, but out of the corner of my eye, I saw red lights flashing on the shoreline boulevard. Car doors were slamming.
"There, officer,"
somebody yelled.
"See?"
A gruff cop voice.
"Looks like that kid on TV. What the heck?"
That guy's armed, another cop said. Call for backup.
I rolled to one side as Ares's blade slashed the sand. I ran for my sword, scooped it up, and launched a swipe at Ares's face, only to find my blade deflected again. Ares seemed to know exactly what I was going to do the moment before I did it. I stepped back toward the surf, forcing him to follow.
Admit it, kid, Ares said. You got no hope. I'm just toying with you.
My senses were working overtime. I now understood what Annabeth had said about ADHD keeping you alive in battle. I was wide awake, noticing every little detail. I could see where Ares was tensing. I could tell which way he would strike. At the same time, I was aware of Annabeth and Grover, 30 feet to my left. I saw a second cop car pulling up, siren wailing. Spectators, people who had been wandering the streets because of the earthquake, were starting to gather. Among the crowd, I thought I saw a few who were walking with the strange, trotting gait of disguised satyrs. There were shimmering forms of spirits, too, as if the dead had risen from Hades to watch the battle. I heard the flap of leathery wings circling somewhere above. More sirens. I stepped farther into the water, but Ares was fast. The tip of his blade ripped my sleeve and grazed my forearm. A police voice on a megaphone said,
"Drop the guns! Set them on the ground, now!"
Guns? I looked at Ares' weapon, and it seemed to be flickering. Sometimes it looked like a shotgun, sometimes a two-handed sword. I didn't know what the humans were seeing in my hands, but I was pretty sure it wouldn't make them like me. Ares turned to glare at our spectators, which gave me a moment to breathe. There were 5 police cars now, and a line of officers crouching behind them, pistols trained on us.
"This is a private matter," Ares bellowed. "Be gone!"
He swept his hand, and a wall of red flame rolled across the patrol cars. The police barely had time to dive for cover before their vehicles exploded. The crowd behind them scattered, screaming. Ares roared with laughter.
"Now, little hero, ha, 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 let's add you to the barbecue."
He slashed. I deflected his blade. I got close enough to strike, tried to fake him out with a feint, but my blow was knocked aside. The waves were hitting me in the back now. Ares was up to his thighs, wading in after me. I felt the rhythm of the sea, the waves growing larger as the tide rolled in, and suddenly I had an idea. Little waves, I thought, and the water behind me seemed to recede. I was holding back the tide by force of will, but tension was building, like carbonation behind a cork. Ares came toward me, grinning confidently. I lowered my blade as if I were too exhausted to go on. "Wait for it," I told the sea. The pressure now was almost lifting me off my feet. Ares raised his sword. I released the tide and jumped, rocketing straight over Ares on a wave. A 6-foot wall of water smashed him full in the face, leaving him cursing and sputtering with a mouthful of seaweed. I landed behind him with a splash and feinted toward his head, as I'd done before. He turned in time to raise his sword, but this time he was disoriented. He didn't anticipate the trick. I changed direction, lunged to the side, and stabbed Riptide straight down into the water, sending the point through the god's heel. The roar that followed made Hades' earthquake look like a minor event. The very sea was blasted back from Ares, leaving a wet circle of sand 50 feet wide. Ichor, the golden blood of the gods, flowed from a gash in the war god's boot. The expression on his face was beyond hatred. It was pain, shock, complete disbelief that he'd been wounded. He limped toward me, muttering ancient Greek curses. Something stopped him. It was as if a cloud covered the sun, but worse. Light faded, sound and color drained away. A cold, heavy presence passed over the beach,
slowing time, dropping the temperature to freezing, and making me feel like life was hopeless, fighting was useless. The darkness lifted. Ares looked stunned. Police cars were burning behind us. The crowd of spectators had fled. Annabeth and Grover stood on the beach in shock, watching the water flood back around Ares' feet, his glowing golden ichor dissipating in the tide. Ares lowered his sword.
"You have made an enemy, godling," he told me. "You have sealed your fate. Every time you raise your blade in battle, every time you hope for success, you will feel my curse. Beware, Perseus Jackson, beware."
His body began to glow. "Percy," Annabeth shouted, "don't watch." I turned away as the god Ares revealed his true immortal form. I somehow knew that if I looked, I would disintegrate into ashes. The light died. I looked back. Ares was gone. The tide rolled out to reveal Hades' bronze helm of darkness. I picked it up and walked toward my friends. But before I got there, I heard the flapping of leathery wings. Three evil-looking grandmothers with lace hats and fiery whips drifted down from the sky and landed in front of me. The middle fury, the one who had been Mrs. Dodds, stepped forward. Her fangs were bared, but for once, she didn't look threatening. She looked more disappointed, as if she'd been planning to have me for supper, but had decided I might give her indigestion.
"We saw the whole thing," she hissed. "So, it truly was not you."
I tossed her the helmet, which she caught in surprise. "Return that to Lord Hades," I said. "Tell him the truth. Tell him to call off the war." She hesitated, then ran a forked tongue over her green leathery lips.
"Live well, Percy Jackson. Become a true hero. Because if you do not, if you ever come into my clutches again..."
She cackled, savoring the idea. Then she and her sisters rose on their bat wings, fluttered into the smoke-filled sky, and disappeared. I joined Grover and Annabeth, who were staring at me in amazement.
"Percy," Grover said, "that was so incredibly...
terrifying," said Annabeth.
"Cool,"
Grover corrected. I didn't feel terrified. I certainly didn't feel cool. I was tired and sore and completely drained of energy.
"Did you guys feel that? Whatever it was?" I asked.
They both nodded uneasily.
"Must have been the Furies overhead," Grover said.
But I wasn't so sure. Something had stopped Ares from killing me, and whatever could do that was a lot stronger than the Furies. I looked at Annabeth, and an understanding passed between us. I knew now what was in that pit, what had spoken from the entrance of Tartarus. I reclaimed my backpack from Grover and looked inside. The master bolt was still there, such a small thing to almost cause World War III.
"We have to get back to New York," I said, "by tonight."
"That's impossible," Annabeth said, "unless we..."
"Fly," I agreed. She stared at me. "Fly like in an airplane, which you were warned never to do, lest Zeus strike you out of the sky, and carrying a weapon that has more destructive power than a nuclear bomb?"
"Yeah," I said, "pretty much exactly like that. Come on." Chapter 21. I Settle My Tab. It's funny how humans can wrap their mind around things and fit them into their version of reality. Chiron had told me that long ago. As usual, I didn't appreciate his wisdom until much later. According to the LA News, the explosion at the Santa Monica Beach had been caused when a crazy kidnapper fired a shotgun at a police car. He accidentally hit a gas main that had ruptured during the earthquake. This crazy kidnapper, a.k.a. Ares,
was the same man who had abducted me and two other adolescents in New York and brought us across country on a 10-day odyssey of terror. Poor little Percy Jackson wasn't an international criminal after all. He'd caused a commotion on that Greyhound bus in New Jersey, trying to get away from his captor, and afterward, witnesses would even swear they had seen the leather-clad man on the bus. Why didn't I remember him before? The crazy man had caused the explosion in the St. Louis Arch. After all, no kid could have done that. A concerned waitress in Denver had seen the man threatening his abductees outside her diner, gotten a friend to take a photo, and notified the police. Finally, brave Percy Jackson, I was beginning to like this kid, had stolen a gun from his captor in Los Angeles and battled him shotgun to rifle on the beach. Police had arrived just in time, but in the spectacular explosion, five police cars had been destroyed and the captor had fled. No fatalities had occurred. Percy Jackson and his two friends were safely in police custody. The reporters fed us this whole story. We just nodded and acted tearful and exhausted, which wasn't hard, and played victimized kids for the cameras.
All I want, I said, choking back my tears, is to see my loving stepfather again. Every time I saw him on TV calling me a delinquent punk, I knew somehow we would be okay. And I know he'd want to reward each and every person in this beautiful city of Los Angeles with a free major appliance from his store. Here's the phone number.
The police and reporters were so moved that they passed around the hat and raised money for 3 tickets on the next plane to New York. I knew there was no choice but to fly. I hoped Zeus would cut me some slack, considering the circumstances, but it was still hard to force myself on board the flight. Takeoff was a nightmare. Every spot of turbulence was scarier than a Greek monster. I didn't unclench my hands from the armrests until we touched down safely at LaGuardia. The local press was waiting for us outside security, but we managed to evade them thanks to Annabeth, who lured them away in her invisible Yankees cap, shouting, "They're over by the frozen yogurt! Come on!" Then rejoined us at baggage claim. We split up at the taxi stand. I told Annabeth and Grover to get back to Half Blood Hill and let Kyra know what had happened. They protested, and it was hard to let them go after all we'd been through, but I knew I had to do this last part of the quest by myself. If things went wrong, if the gods didn't believe me, I wanted Annabeth and Grover to survive to tell Kyra the truth. I hopped in a taxi and headed into Manhattan. 30 minutes later, I walked into the lobby of the Empire State Building. I must have looked like a homeless kid, with my tattered clothes and my scraped-up face. I hadn't slept in at least 24 hours. I went up to the guard at the front desk and said, 600th floor. He was reading a huge book with a picture of a wizard on the front. I wasn't much into fantasy, but the book must have been good because the guard took a while to look up.
No such floor, kiddo.
I need an audience with Zeus. He gave me a vacant smile.
Sorry?
You heard me. I was about to decide this guy was just a regular mortal, and I'd better run for it before he called the straitjacket patrol when he said,
No appointment? No audience, kiddo. Lord Zeus doesn't see anyone unannounced.
Oh, I think I'll make an exception. I slipped off my backpack and unzipped the top. The guard looked inside at the metal cylinder, not getting what it was for a few seconds. Then his face went pale.
That isn't...
Yes, it is, I promised. You want me to take it out and...
No! No!
He scrambled out of his seat, fumbled around his desk for a key card, then handed it to me.
Insert this in the security slot. Make sure nobody else is in the elevator with you.
I did as he told me. As soon as the elevator doors closed, I slipped the key into the slot. The card disappeared and a new button appeared on the console.
a red one that said 600. I pressed it and waited and waited. Muzak played. Raindrops keep falling on my head. Finally, ding, the door slid open. I stepped out and almost had a heart attack. I was standing on a narrow stone walkway in the middle of the air. Below me was Manhattan, from the height of an airplane. In front of me, white marble steps wound up the spine of a cloud into the sky. My eyes followed the stairway to its end, where my brain just could not accept what I saw. "Look again," my brain said. "We're looking," my eyes insisted. "It's really there." From the top of the clouds rose the decapitated peak of a mountain, its summit covered with snow. Clinging to the mountainside were dozens of multi-leveled palaces, a city of mansions, all with white-columned porticos, gilded terraces, and bronze braziers glowing with a thousand fires. Roads wound crazily up to the peak, where the largest palace gleamed against the snow. Precariously perched gardens bloomed with olive trees and rose bushes. I could make out an open-air market filled with colorful tents, a stone amphitheater built on one side of the mountain, a hippodrome and a coliseum on the other. It was an ancient Greek city, except it wasn't in ruins. It was new and clean and colorful, the way Athens must have looked 2,500 years ago. "This place can't be here," I told myself. "The tip of a mountain hanging over New York City like a billion-ton asteroid? How could something like that be anchored above the Empire State Building in plain sight of millions of people and not get noticed?" But here it was, and here I was. My trip through Olympus was a daze. I passed some giggling wood nymphs who threw olives at me from their garden. Hawkers in the market offered to sell me ambrosia on a stick and a new shield and a genuine glitter weave replica of the Golden Fleece, as seen on Hephaestus TV. The nine muses were tuning their instruments for a concert in the park while a small crowd gathered, satyrs and naiads, and a bunch of good-looking teenagers who might have been minor gods and goddesses. Nobody seemed worried about an impending civil war. In fact, everybody seemed in a festive mood. Several of them turned to watch me pass and whisper to themselves. I climbed the main road toward the big palace at the peak. It was a reverse copy of the palace in the underworld. There, everything had been black and bronze. Here, everything glittered white and silver. I realized Hades must have built his palace to resemble this one. He wasn't welcomed in Olympus except on winter solstice, so he built his own Olympus underground. Despite my bad experience with him, I felt a little sorry for the guy. To be banished from this place seemed really unfair. It would make anybody bitter. Steps led up to a central courtyard. Past that, the throne room. Room really isn't the right word. The place made Grand Central Station look like a broom closet. Massive columns rose to a domed ceiling, which was gilded with moving constellations. 12 thrones, built for beings the size of Hades, were arranged in an inverted U, just like the cabins at Camp Half-Blood. An enormous fire crackled in the central hearth pit. The thrones were empty except for two at the end, the head throne on the right and the one to its immediate left. I didn't have to be told who the two gods were that were sitting there, waiting for me to approach. I came toward them, my legs trembling. The gods were in giant human form, as Hades had been, but I could barely look at them without feeling a tingle, as if my body were starting to burn. Zeus, the lord of the gods, wore a dark blue, pinstripe suit. He sat on a simple throne of solid platinum. He had a well-trimmed beard, marbled gray and black like a storm cloud. His face was proud and handsome and grim. his eyes rainy gray. As I got nearer to him, the air crackled and smelled of ozone. The god sitting next to him was his brother, without a doubt, but he was dressed very differently. He reminded me of a beachcomber from Key West. He wore leather sandals, khaki Bermuda shorts, and a